You're listening to Valley Edition. I'm Joe Moore. U.S. Poet Laureate Juan Felipe Herrera is a native of Central California. He grew up in the Valley with farm worker parents and later taught poetry at Fresno State. He recently was awarded a second term as U.S. Poet Laureate. FM 89's Ezra David Romero caught up with Herrera about what he's looking forward to in his second term and what he gleaned from his first year in the office.
Hey, thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you so much. It's an honor. It's a pleasure.
Well, congratulations on this second year, this new gig. How is your project La Casa de Colores going?
Well, you know, we're about to finish it up. You know, La Casa de Colores, as you know, was on the internet. I for the Library of Congress website, and I wanted to have a forum so that everyone in the United States could enter poetry without having to go through all the weird editorial processes and steps, which, you know, we do as writers. We all do that as writers. But I really wanted to open up the scope. So it was based on a theme, for example, family, and then everybody would respond. But then you enter it, and then it goes in, and then people enter another one, and it goes in. And then I just wanted to paste them all together like an infinite stream, like an epic poem, as the themes changed every month. I think we're done with that one.
For July, you wrote World Unity Tortillas. Tell me about that.
I was encouraging people to write a poem on world unity. And I put tortillas because that's what I wanted to put, and it had a cool flavor. So people could enter, you know, world unity, whatever, you know, world unity sandwich. Like a recipe poem with ingredients that the writer felt would be the ingredients we need for unity in the world, but in the form of a recipe poem. It's like a recipe poem, and the idea is to put ingredients. What if you were to write a recipe, what would on world unity, whether you make a tortilla or a loaf of bread or peach jam, but if it was for world unity, what would be the ingredients? So that's what it is. It's a poem, it's a recipe, but the theme is world unity.
What ingredients did you add, and what ingredients did other people add?
Mine had to do with all colors. It's called World Unity Salsa, and that's where I got the tortilla idea. But I was talking about, all people of all colors. That's where I started. And, of course, it has a lot of rhythm. It's a kind of a spoken word style, and it's musical. But then again, all people. So that's what this is. So this is what I wrote. The heat from the tortilla warms, then melts the cheese. Like the warm smile of your love melts your heart. Cilantro, tomato, and onion drip a spicy mix, a compliment to the soft and smooth, the perfect kiss.
What was the response like to World Unity Tortillas?
We had 500 poems respond. Some we had more, and some we had less. So I was looking for millions, but 500 is a good number, and 600 is a good number.
I'll read a piece of what someone wrote.
Okay.
Gratitude tortilla, Arabs and Jews as brothers tortilla, stop world bad behavior tortilla, no aggression tortilla, fairness tortilla, pita. Kind of fun.
That's a good way. I mean, imagine if we could do that tortilla. We could eat that tortilla. We'd be doing pretty good.
I'd go eat some right now.
Me too.
So you're sort of an ambassador now for Central California. Are you in essence stamping America with Fresno, Selma, and the way of life here?
That's who I am. You know, I grew up in this area, and my father worked in this area before I was born, and so did my mother and my sisters. Fresno goes way back in my family.
How does America react to your style of poetry influenced by this great valley?
Open embraces, a lot of welcoming. I get welcomed everywhere I go. A lot of people that I meet are also farm workers, and they can't believe that I'm actually the poet laureate of the United States. And then they show me their poetry, too, or they just simply walk up to me and want a picture book signed for their children, or a parent comes and wants me to present to me their son. Well, for example, and I was in Las Vegas, and the father had come up with his son, just the two of them, and he said, around 12 years old, he says, look, I want you to meet the poet laureate of the United States. Quiero que conozcas al poeta laureado de los Estados Unidos. And the son just stood in front of me, kind of big-eyed, And I said, well, how are you? It's good to meet you. And we shook hands.
While we're on that note, how does the poetry scene stick out here in Central California, you know, compared to what you're experiencing elsewhere?
It's very big. You know, it's very big. It really stands out because everybody's talked about the Fresno School for decades. So people ask me, what's going on in Fresno? You know, we had Phil Levine and was a poet laureate of the United States, and he got Pulitzer Prizes and a great poet that everybody knows about. And the rest of the poets, and now you're the poet laureate of the United States. What's happening out there? Was there a magic? Is it the grapes? What is it? And I said, oh, well, you know, I don't know if you've heard, but Fresno is the poetry capital of the United States. and then the audiences here in Fresno, they just got a big kick out of that. And, well, you know, we have a great tradition of poetry here.
What's the voice coming out of this area?
With Phil's great influence of really saying things that are real, you know, writing about real stuff, not just making it up or pretending you were in Oceanside in 1956, and then writing about Oceanside in 1956, and you never ever even passed by Oceanside, and you weren't even born in the 50s, he would not, and I'm saying this very mildly, he would not appreciate that poem. So Phil encouraged a lot of us and a lot of his students to write about what's real and what they really have experienced and know about.
You know, you being the U.S. Poet Laureate means so much to the Latino Spanish-speaking community in the U.S., communities in the U.S. What are you noticing among Latino people and poets and the issues and themes coming out of that population?
You know, people are, it's a new time. You know, it's a new time. Back in, I would say, 1989, 1990, we had a few Latinas and Latinos in Master of Fine Arts programs. You could almost count them on in your hands, no more than a handful. We had a handful, a beautiful handful. And now we're going in through this passageway. We have many, many Latinas and Latinos in Master of Fine Arts programs in creative writing, poetry, and fiction, and various genres, which is beautiful. You know, those doors have been opened, and we have opened those doors as well through, you know, through speaking up and wanting to make a difference because it's very important. So that's where that's what's going on in the institutions, a new openness and a new. You know, new participants, a lot of new Latinos and Latinas writing, and amazing, amazing books as well, publishing as well. The publishers have also publishers sense what's going on, so the doors are open by the publishers as well. You know, Knopf, all of them, Random House and Grey Wolf and Copper Canyon and on, you know, Coffee House Press, on, the university presses. In particular, University of Arizona Press, but many, many, many.
I understand you were just in Austin, you know, at a Latino poetry conference or symposium, something like that. What did you encounter there? Give me some of the stories that you encountered from these poets.
It's a beautiful workshop, Canto Mundo, 2-day full immersion, intense, collective workshop in poetry for Latinas and Latinos. What I noticed in there by the writers, that most of them have MFAs. See, that's what's interesting. And a number of them have books. We only had a pencil, paper, a fountain pen, a Schaefer with blue ink that I liked, a leaky one, a yellow paper pad, legal size, which I enjoyed because it was yellow and I could write forever and it didn't cost that much, and each other. And whatever books we could all talk about and heard about and go grab. Nietzsche, Neruda, Eric Fromm, and the Prophet, and a great mix, you know, for example. And historical reclamation. We did hit the libraries, and we were very interested in reclaiming our histories and herstories and identities. And so we just had kind of like two currents, maybe an international connection across the border with material in our own families. But now we have these new currents that I mentioned, you know. So I found that to be a very intense set of participations and observations with this new crew of Latina and Latino writers.
Do you feel like some of that, were some of those themes like activism? Talk to me about that.
Major. I mean, it's all activism. See, the activism has continued, which is most interesting. It's continued. So the activism is even more intense than it used to be because everyone's doing activist literary projects in their schools or in their communities or in the universities. They're doing a lot of that. We didn't have much time to talk about it. I wish we would have had more time to talk about that, but it came through in conversations and in their work. So they're all activists. They're all writing with, you know, what they learned in the MFA and what they're learning on their own, and they're all bilingual. And they're all talking about their community, their home in Puerto Rico, and now in New York, in Brooklyn, or the Bronx, and or Santo Domingo, or here in Fresno. We had David Campos from Fresno participate in Canto Mundo. And one of the founders of Canto Mundo, Carmen Tafoya, was here in Fresno also early years. So it's a very powerful mix now that we're talking about it.
Can you give me an example of what you heard?
One of the poems was read by a young 24-year-old Puerto Rican from New York about Puerto Rico. And it was in the voice of a Puerto Rican working class. Maybe it was a brother, uncle, or a grandfather, and using the, you know, Puerto Riqueño way of talking and Puerto Riqueño Español, working class Español, with a lot of pop to it, you know, and what was going on. But I was so caught up in the performance and in the melody coming. The melodic voice style and the deep Puerto Riqueño talking style, that just what took me. So for me, it was more the language than what was being said. It was the language and the tone and the rhythms from Puerto Rico that got a hold of me. And I became aware of how beautiful Puerto Rico is just by listening to his one beautiful, deep voice, 24 years old.
So it's really about voice and, like, having these people's voices heard. Maybe they weren't heard before.
They weren't heard before. I mean, how often have we heard a Puerto Riqueño, Jíbaro-style poem told by a 24-year-old from Puerto Rico living in New York? I think the answer is going to be a small number. And so in a way, it's still the homework. It's a creative homework. But it's still our homework, is to tell our stories through the voices of our peoples and all peoples, you know, as well.
It's been a tough year. There's these mass shootings fueled by racism, these shootings of policemen, and, you know, even disasters. Are you noticing an overarching poem in America right now?
Yes, there is. You know, there is the big poem, and it's one of social response, you know, responding to the incredible conflict and pain, gun violence, quote-unquote small massacres and large-scale massacres. What do we do with that, you know? What do we do with all that bloodletting and chaos and fury that explodes when violence erupts and is takes place in our communities for no reason at all in many cases? Well, why should there be reason for violence, actually? There really is no reason for it. Poets come from miles and miles away. They come from miles and miles away to listen to poetry because they feel that it's going to talk about their pain, what they're really, really interested in. And it's not personal stuff. It's not, you know, I need money poetry. It's climate control. That's what I've been seeing.
So it sounds like you're hearing this poem of, like, pain or a wound in America.
It's a pain or wound. That seeks the melody of poetry to heal, because with poetry, you know, you're using your voice. You're using that which is most precious to you, which is your real self, and your heart, which you really want to give to others. Not a not a, you're not putting anybody down in the poem. You're kind of putting things together and trying to make sense of what's taking place, and you're trying to offer something that's going to take a step towards resolving what's something terrible that's taking place. So I see a lot of energy. I would say 110%, 125% energy directed in that, at that level. People want to say something to do something. Say something to do something about something that is almost impossible to describe. So it's almost like paradox.
So it's, in some sense, it's like there's this great pain or this great wound, and they want to write so they can create hope.
That's right. And a hope that has to tackle something so big, it almost seems impossible, and yet they're doing it. And there was this boy at Cal State LA with his hand up. I said, okay, I'll point to him. I said, yes. He goes, yeah, I'd like to know how to write a story. I said to myself, I wonder what he really means by that. I said, what kind of story are you writing? So I could be, you know, give him more detail. He goes, I'm writing about children that are left behind when their parents are deported. He wanted to know how to better write that particular story. So then I invited him to come up to the front of the stage to stand next to me so that people could acknowledge him, and they all applauded for him. And I think we must have said a few more words about writing, but I really wanted to acknowledge him for being such a good-hearted human being at the age of 11 and being so concerned about writing and valuing the power of writing, because he wanted to take care of this problem of abandoned children without a father or mother only because they had been picked up and packed in a van and shipped away, never to come back. And he saw that as his mission as a young writer to work on.
Wow.
So I saw that as most significant, and that's what I see on the road.
Before we go, would you mind doing a little exercise with me?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Kind of like you did for this little boy. Could we write a little poem?
We can write a little poem.
Maybe on this topic of pain in the wound we see in America at this moment.
Okay.
So if you were going to write a poem, what would it be on this topic? Maybe 4 lines, 5?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Where would you start?
I would start with the word pain, and then I would end with the word fountain.
And what elements would be between those words?
I would have pain and wound, and then I would follow with voice, and then I would follow with beauty, and I would follow with the hope that there's still something that will rise up from the self in the shape of a fountain that will quell and heal this wound.
So go ahead and read
what you
will. It
would be pain and wound, your voice that is still flowing, your personal fountain. That would be my short poem.
What does that mean to you?
At times we do have pain, and we also at times we have been carrying a wound from the past. But there is beauty that still flows in us, and that beauty is that fountain that we can go to heal.
So you have one more year left. What do you want to accomplish?
This next year, I'm going to have another online project called Catalina Neon, The Technicolor Adventures of Catalina Neon Online. It's going to be a project that's going to be available, hopefully, in all school libraries, where children can write the book. I'm just going to present Chapter 1, the story of Catalina Neon, who has a special power. And then Chapter 2, 3, 4, and 5 are going to be written by the children with downloads by the artist, Juana Medina, a book illustrator. So there'll be downloads to work with, to paint, to color, and props to follow through on Chapter 2, 3, 4, and 5. And this is for second and third graders.
Great.
So I want to encourage young people to write their storybooks and with poetry here and there.
It's great. And then your second term starts in August or September?
It starts in September. In September, I'm back on the road, and also be working with 30 school districts in Chicago, and also opening up the Laureate Lab at Fresno State, our very own one and only, unique in the whole wide world, Laureate Lab. It's an experimental poetry-torium. It's a place where you can paint and write on walls and wash it away on walls. It's a place where we're going to unlock the potentials of poetry through unknown experiments that are yet to be accomplished with paper, with poetry, with paint, with voice, with performance. It's where you get to mix everything up and see how far poetry can go, which is pretty far.
We've been talking with U.S. Poet Laureate Juan Felipe Herrera. He starts his second term as U.S. Poet Laureate in September. Thanks, Juan.
Thank you very much.
And that's all for today's Valley Edition. As always, we'd like to know what you think. You can send us a letter, an email, however you'd like to do it. Online, we are talk@kvpr.org and on Twitter, @kvpr and @Valley Edition. You can also find our audio archives and our podcasts on our website at kvpr.org and subscribe. Get multimedia content and more. That's kvpr.org. For Valley Edition, producer and reporter Ezra David Romero, reporters Jeffrey Hess and Kerry Klein, audio engineer Marv Allen, and production and operations manager Don Weaver, I'm Joe Moore. This is Valley Edition on Valley Public Radio.
Support for Valley Edition comes from the James Irvine Foundation, the California Endowment. Health happens when California values schools more than prisons. Learn more at calendow.org. And by the California Healthcare Foundation, dedicated to a healthcare system that works for all Californians. On the web at chcf.org.